what you are basically. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence itself.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mike podcast. I'm your host Mike and thank you so much for joining me. Tonight we've got an awesome episode to share with you. We're going to be discussing hyperinflations and the collapse of fiat money. So we're going to look back at some historic examples of when monetary systems failed and the fiat currencies have hyperinflated. And in part one, I've got a guest who has actually lived through a hyperinflation herself as a child. So we're going to try and draw some of the parallels from that to make sense of why the gold price is rising so fast and what that might be telling us. Then in part two, we have a really practical look at gold and how we can use that to protect ourselves during monetary resets. So a very useful and important episode to share with you all, particularly now as we do go into what looks to be the final days of the current monetary system. So I'm going to leave it there for the introduction. Members, please head over to parallelmike.com to listen to the full episode. If you're not a member yet, please consider subscribing over on the website. You can also look at my consultations tab there if you would like to discuss wealth preservation and investment strategies with me. In closing, I hope you're all well, healthy and happy. And like always, I'll see each and every one of you in the next one. Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mike podcast, episode number 56. Tonight's episode, we're going to be talking about gold. We're going to discuss gold as a form of money, but we're also going to talk about the war on gold that's been going on ever since 1971, but really you could trace this back all the way to 1933. And of course, that war is being enacted by the fiat money banksters as they print this dodgy fiat money, and today it's just digits on a screen. But right now, the suppression of gold that's been going on for a long time using the paper contracts and the paper markets, it's breaking down. And we're seeing gold rise. Today, I just checked the price once more. Another all-time high of $2,365. And you know, I don't think this is going to stop now. I think we are going into the fiat endgame. So I really wanted to have this discussion so we could lay out what's happening. Of course, I'm extremely interested in this topic. I've spent many years researching gold and I'll share some of that research with you tonight. But to help me pick this one apart, we have a returning guest. Her name is At Moni. So welcome back to the show, Moni. How the hell is it going today?
Hello, Mike. It's nice to be back and I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you back on the show and it's a very interesting time. There's lots of things happening in the world, but if you're watching the gold price, that's telling us something right now because recently gold broke out to a new all-time high above $2,000 per ounce. And like I said, it's $2,365 per ounce now. And gold literally smashed through every price level after 2000 without pause, which is highly unusual, especially for gold because it's a very stable asset. And I always say there's times in history where gold is just like a marathon runner. You know, it's steady, it's going, it's plugging away. But then there's times where it becomes a sprinter. But those times when gold becomes a sprinter, it's because something serious is happening. Now, I know when we look outside, it looks like, yeah, okay, the world's ending. However, there's nothing new that's come to the news cycle recently that suggests gold should be breaking through these price levels because it went through 2,000, 2,100, 2,200, 2,300, and now it's approaching $2,400 without any sign of stopping. So the velocity and strength of this move suggests to me gold is telling us something. There's a whale out there or a number of people with a significant amount of capital who are buying gold. And I don't know who they are, but somebody is buying a lot of gold right now. And I think those people know something that we don't. And we're going to find out what it is eventually. And we're going to discuss tonight what it could be. But I wanted to ask you, Moni, let's begin with this one. What was the price of gold when you bought your first ounce and how does that compare with today? And then secondly, how do you feel about this move? Do you think it's a worrying move or an exciting move?
Yeah, Michael, that's a good question. My first ever gold coin was the Canadian maple.
She's laughing because earlier on she called it the Canadian maple syrup. Yeah. And we had a laugh and we decided that actually Canadian maple syrup was probably maybe even a better investment than gold. It could have been. You know, it has doubled over here in the past 2 years because we buy maple syrup. So maybe it was a better investment. We're not sure. But whether you bought Canadian maple leaf gold coins or Canadian maple syrup, you've had a great time of it the last few years. So you bought a Canadian maple leaf money. And how much was that when you bought it?
£960. So at the time, I think it was about $1,000 US dollars.
Well, right now, gold in the British pound is around $1,900. And this is one thing I would suggest to listeners. When you're looking at the gold price, it's cool to look at it in the dollar because the dollar is an important currency, but you should be checking it also in the currency you bought it in because you want to know how much the currency you're saving in or being paid in, should I say, is devaluing against gold. So you bought it in the British pound and it's gone up over 100% in the space of what, 5-6 years?
Probably 6 years, yeah.
So how do you feel about that? Do you feel gold's done its job of protecting you and your wealth?
Yeah, I would be down a lot. Well, against anything, Michael, everything got so expensive, regardless of the currency you look at. So it's definitely shown that buying gold protects you very well against inflation and whatever they do with the currency. Slightly worrying because as you said the movement in price is sharp and reminds all the situations, all the times in history when times got really hard and it was a sign of market crash coming.
So gold's got that really amazing property for sniffing out a rat, so I think that's what it's doing right now. And for the gold price to move this fast in spite of all the gold manipulation and suppression, which we're going to talk a lot about tonight, I really want to get into how they do that and why it's breaking down. But the fact that it's moved so fast and they haven't been able to crush it back down suggests to me that the force behind the gold move is extremely powerful. A lot of capital, we're talking billions and billions of dollars or pounds or whatever they're buying it in. And we don't know who those people are, but they know something. And they're buying lots of gold. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of tons. So I think we're going to find out eventually what gold's telling us. But for now, and I was saying this to my investment community recently, you have to be careful. This is telling us something serious is probably on the horizon. You know, we spoke a lot recently about the eclipse and we all had a bit of a joke about it. But there's a serious side to that too, in that 9 of the biggest market crashes in history have come just after an eclipse. A solar eclipse around the time of a full moon in the preceding 8 weeks. So either the first full moon or the second full moon within 7 or 8 days of that full moon, that's when the biggest market crashes have come. So maybe that's what it's telling us. Before we move on, maybe we could talk a little bit about what gold actually is. I know the listeners understand gold's money and why it's so important, but Poland's an interesting country because it's had hyperinflation in the recent past. And this is something that people in the West haven't seen. And therefore, in the West, we have really been conditioned to accept all manner of crazy things, which I don't think people who have lived through those kind of times would accept. Now, don't get me wrong, there's people in Poland today who use paper money. However, what you do find is when a nation goes through a hyperinflation, they become very attached to real assets and very skeptical of financialized assets. Now, in the West, of course, everything's financialized. Your pension portfolio, your digits on a screen, your notes. Everything's a financial asset and every financial asset is essentially a contractual claim.
Mike, would you believe it? Poland in the past 20th century had 6 monetary resets, 6 of them. And 3 of them happened around the Second World War. First one at the end of 1930s, then 1944, and the third one in 1950s. And actually, the 1950s one is quite interesting if you want to hear a story how they've done it, because they combined it as well with the gold confiscation, which not many people are aware of or remember it. So that monetary reset in 1950 happened in October when people had the highest level of savings. And what they'd done is that they kept the entire thing in a deeper secrecy. No one knew it. And they organized between the bankers and military who ran the trucks with newly printed money. It was very interesting to see how people reacted to it, because of course, at first, on Saturday evening, all the top bankers and people at the high positions in relation to media and newspapers at the time learned about the change of currency that was meant to be immediate. So it would happen on Monday. The old currency would be completely cancelled and the new one would take place and would be the legal tender. So those people learned on Saturday evening on Warsaw was going to happen. They returned to their homes and they were going at night to wake up people and try to buy horses, try to buy whatever they could to get rid of the paper that was becoming worthless 2 days later. On Sunday, when the newspapers printed the articles informing the wider population about what was going on, went out into shops and trying to spend it in restaurants and bars. The bars and restaurants would close and those places would be then forcibly open and forced to serve, because the police and army would get involved, basically making people pretend as nothing was going about to happen. And of course, on Monday, after the bank holiday was over, the banks opened and new currency was being released. That showed another problem, because people had only 10 or 11 days to exchange the old currency into new. And they were taking notes as well of how much money they had. And they would have then a great register showing who had much more savings than perhaps it was anticipated, etc. So that definitely showed how people would behave in a sudden currency exchange. But then also they combined it with another law, which suddenly forbade people from holding privately gold, diamonds, I think as well, and foreign currency. And if you were trading those in or trying to exchange, you know, barter, etc., that was punishable by death as well. So
what years are we talking here again?
1950.
The 1950 currency reset, they were still using capital punishment in Poland.
Yeah.
That's wild. Now, everything that you're saying there is something that I have found in every currency reset where they've reset the fiat currency. They always target gold because, of course, gold is true money. So they can't have people going to gold because then they've got an escape route from the new slave chains that they're going to get put on, which is the new currency. But also many of the other things that you said really rang true, like the people trying to go out and spend the money before it actually came to pass and other people realized what was happening. That's a wealth transfer. So every time you have a hyperinflation, there is a wealth transfer because the people who understand what's going on, or the people who are closest to the money printers, the banksters, and the politicians are a part of that too, they all understand what's going on. The average man and woman on the street doesn't. So they get ripped off all the time. You know, you might have somebody, for example, go to them and actually buy a property, buy some house off them in the hyperinflating currency, or create a debt for them. Or you could take on a debt, for example, and then pay it off in hyperinflated notes. So you could take a loan off a neighbor and say, oh, listen, can I lend 10 grand off you today? Go spend that 10 grand on gold, knowing that the hyperinflation or currency reset is going to come, and then pay them back in hyperinflating notes. And technically, if you create a legal contract, there's nothing they can do. But I want to hand it back to you because there's so much I could say on that one. But I want to learn a little bit more about Poland, because I know they had a currency reset in the 1990s after the fall of the Soviet Empire. I know much more about that one personally. But do you want to tell us a little bit more about Poland's many currency resets?
Yeah, definitely. You see, with the first reset I mentioned in the 1950s, people actually were trying to pay the workers and settle any debts before the new currency was implemented, because unlike the hyperinflation, they've just devalued the new currency as such. So if you had 100 zloty, that was then exchanged into 2 zloty or 1.
So this is when they actually lop digits off the currency. So it's like tomorrow, if you woke up and let's say you had $100,000 in your bank account, they just knock a zero off it and now you've got $10,000. So if you had debt of $100,000, now you have to pay 5 times the amount. So this is what they do during a currency reset. But in the build-up to that, you see high inflation. So the numbers on the notes get bigger and bigger. And then when they have to reset it, they just knock those numbers off. They just chop it off. But if you've been saving in that, now all of a sudden you wake up and your savings have been devalued by 50%. You don't know how much you're going to lose, but it's going to be a lot. So this is what they did then, right? And that meant that people could go out and use the old currency, knowing that the digits were going to get knocked off the day after.
Yeah. And I think it was very telling as well how swiftly they moved. No one knew about it. And suddenly when everything was implemented, people had only 10 days to exchange all the money before the old currency became paper. So they had to be very clever about it, because people who had more money, they didn't want to suddenly appear on the register showing how rich they were. So they were looking into ways of exchanging the currency they had, but not getting the names listed in places where they wouldn't want to have it. So they would ask other people to exchange it for them, for example, in their name. And fairly, they combined that fear and that moment of rush and uncertainty with putting a very high punishment, which was 15 years in prison, for owning or trading gold or foreign currency. And again, that was punishable by death. And they didn't give much time for that neither. They were quite gracious as a government, because they said you don't have to sell the gold or currency. You can just deposit in a bank. and you can always, you know, take it whenever you want back. But of course, that would never happen.
But this happens all the time during currency resets, because when you are resetting a currency, you want to trap as many of the working and middle classes, and the upper classes too, but not the connected. You know, basically you bail out your friends and your lackeys, and then you strip the wealth from everyone else, and you do a big, huge wealth transfer. And that's what we're going into. I mean, we've discussed some of these new mechanisms that they're able to now implement with our stocks and bonds and bank bail-ins. I mean, everyone knows about bank bail-ins by now. It's not even a conspiracy. The everyday man and woman on the street maybe doesn't. But most people understand that it's not money anyways. It's all debt, because, of course, it's all issued as debt. So we're just trading around debt tokens to one another. The real wealth is Earth. It's Mother Nature. It's all of the things that exist from nature. And, of course, gold is the supreme metal, because there is nothing else like it. You know, it's the ideal metal for money, and that's why it is money. And yet today, there's people coming up with all kinds of new ideas and synthetic ideas, which, of course, anything by man is corrupted immediately by man. So I think we're going to see all of these things and probably much more in the coming years. But maybe we could talk about some of those past confiscations as well. I mean, we've had many. There was the 1933 one in America, and that's probably the one that people speak about the most. But there's lots of confusion about the gold confiscations. And in fact, most of them, the word confiscation doesn't even fit. So with Executive Order 6102, it was Franklin D. Roosevelt, and he signed that into law on April the 5th, 1933. And he actually used a Trading with the Enemy Act. Now, the Trading with the Enemy Act is extremely interesting, because essentially that allows the government to take property off people who they class as an enemy. So that means the public were being treated as enemies. And they actually used this during World War One, and then later again during World War Two, to literally take the house, the businesses, the assets off of Americans. But these would be, for example, Japanese Americans or German Americans. And they literally just went to their house, they took them away, they put them in a concentration camp, and they stole all of the assets. And when the 1933 gold confiscation came in, they used that same act. So, of course, the US citizen was the enemy, was the enemy of the bankers. Now, at the time, gold was valued at $20.67 per ounce. And when he made this act, he gave people literally just a month to get their gold and go hand it over where you could sell it. So it wasn't a confiscation per se, because a true confiscation, it's like the Nazis coming to your house. You know, they come to your house, say, give us the gold, and they point a gun at you and they take it. But this wasn't that. It was like, you have to voluntarily come and hand it over, and then you can sell it to us for $20.67 per ounce. Now, of course, they were about to devalue the currency. That's why they wanted all of the real stuff, the gold. And as soon as they got all of the gold in, they revalued gold to $35 per ounce. Now, what that means is that the paper dollars were worth 40% less. Of course, the gold's not worth less. The gold's worth more, because that's how it works. And that's why we're seeing gold right now go to $2,365 per ounce. It's because the currency is worth less every single week now, because of the rapid inflation. So we're going into that hyperinflationary stage, and we'll talk about Poland's hyperinflation, because you actually lived through that. So we've got first-hand experience here. But just going back to this one, so the executive order was you have to hand over your gold, but he did allow in the order for people to keep up to 5 gold coins. So that's actually around 5 ounces of gold. And that would be valued back then, it would have been $100. So that means even after they revalued it, you'd have got 40% more than that. Today, it would probably be equivalent to something like, I don't know, $15,000, $16,000. So people were allowed to keep that. And if you had a family, say, let's imagine there's 4 or 5 of you, that's 5 coins each, right? So there was stipulations for not criminalizing people. But if you did get caught with more gold, and I quote from Wikipedia, under the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917, later amended by the Emergency Banking Act of March the 9th, 1933, violation of the order was punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 and up to 10 years in prison or both. So again, going back to what you was talking about, this is the threat. We're going to devalue the currency, and if you don't allow us to strip you of some wealth, we're going to put you in prison or we're going to give you a fine. And this is one thing that I always say to people, and I actually wrote a guide on gold confiscation for my Patreon newsletter subscribers, for people who sign up to my investing content. And in this guide, I discussed how everything they do is always legally done. Therefore, there are legal loopholes because they have to do it legally because they're keeping their gold. Make no mistake, they're not giving up their gold. It's just to get your gold. It's to fear you into giving it to them. And you have to do it voluntarily. It's an offer, right? This is an offer. We are offering you the chance to give us your gold and not be brought in under this law. But they don't know if you've got the gold or not. You would have to then criminalize yourself to be arrested afterwards. And the way you do that is by admitting you had the gold. But there were so many stipulations, and here's one for you. One of the stipulations was gold that was being used in industry, professions, or art was exempted. So if you was an artist using gold, or if you said this gold is to make artistry or jewellery, you was exempt.
Oh, fantastic. It's always down to interpretation, isn't it? But you just reminded me, actually, in the 1950s, there was exemption for rings and certain types of jewellery as well. So as long as you knew the law, you could navigate your wealth into safety, but you needed to know all those tricks and hooks.
You needed to not allow yourself to be feared into doing something that was going to be detrimental to you and your family. But of course, most people are so obedient these days, just as we saw the last few years, that the moment somebody makes a threat, because that's what it is, it's a threat, people say, oh, well, I'm going to do what I'm told. And of course, that's always the worst thing you can do in these situations because it's not going to be for your benefit. But it wasn't just artists, it was also dentists. So dentists who would, you know, you had dentists back then who probably became bullion dealers on the side.
Oh, Michael, you just reminded me. I've discovered it today. So believe it or not, people in 1950s traded in there to the government, the gold. But of course, not everyone did. And people soon realized that they've been cheated because the government said, listen, if you trade in the gold, you're going to be paid in that currency, that news water, that is going to be pegged to dollar. And it wasn't. It devalued really quickly. So
they lied about it. They said it's going to be pegged to the dollar.
Yeah, because the dollar, it was meant to be pegged to the ruble, but the ruble was pegged to dollar at the time. you spoke about a dentist and sausages. So people started smuggling in gold because they realized that with the currency devaluating so quickly, they need to save into something more trustworthy. So the black market has flourished, and people were going smuggling from abroad gold to Poland. And one of the most famous smugglers was actually a dentist who was claiming to be exporting some goods and importing from the Western countries sausages. And in the sausages, there was gold hidden. So I thought that was quite interesting. And maybe that's why you had in the United States the kielbasa mafia, because kielbasa in Polish is sausage. I don't know. But what was interesting as well is because dollar was so, and foreign currency was so valued in Poland, that the smuggling business was going a little bit more complex because they were smuggling out of Poland dollar, and with the dollar buying gold abroad and then bringing it back to Poland. So I don't know where they got dollar from, on the other hand, because dollar was also forbidden. But people who were in the right places, knowing right people, I guess they knew how to get dollar too.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it as well, is when it comes to currency, we can have real money, you can have gold, and that gold is going to be a store of value, and it's going to move up in the equivalent that the currency, the paper currency, is going down. So that's fantastic. However, you can't pay your taxes in it and you can't pay your debts in it. And that is what the state has the monopoly on, is that they say you must pay your taxes, you must pay for your goods and services in this currency. And today, when you buy a gold coin, if you buy an American Eagle, it's got a nominal value on there. It says $100. In the UK, if you buy a British sovereign, it's got a nominal value of £1 because it used to be called the pound. The Great British Pound was not a piece of paper and it wasn't a coin of debased metal. It was a gold coin. It was a sovereign, which has 0.23 ounces of gold in it. You know, so that's what a pound actually used to be. But going back to the American confiscation, yeah, they claim that they got around 80% of the gold back, but I've had good research that says actually it was far, far less than that. And I also know there was a ton of people, wealthy families and businessmen and women, and they were still using gold. They were still buying gold because there were so many get-out clauses. It really was just a whole big, massive psyop fear operation. And the people who abided by it, unfortunately, they were a bit dumb. They were a bit dumb to do it because they lost 40% of their wealth by doing that. And I would say much more because, of course, over the next 10 years, it just continually devalued. And gold was kept at a fixed price of $35, almost to try and say to people, if you try and use this, it's only worth $35. But of course, it wasn't. And then it got to the 1970 period where gold all of a sudden was allowed to be owned again. But I know that there was people dealing in gold all throughout the 1960s. One of the things they did, for example, was they created tokens. So it wasn't a gold coin. It wasn't gold bullion. It was now a gold token. And what they did was they was minting gold coins with religious symbols on it and then calling it a religious artifact because in the law, religious artifacts were exempt. Of course they were. You can't go around all the churches and take all the gold off them. So they made these coins with religious symbols on it and people were saying, oh, I'm not dealing in gold. This is just my religion. So that was another way to get around it. There were so many gold jewelry, of course. You know, if people had any sense, they could have literally melted down their gold bullion and just made some bracelets out of it. And all of a sudden, it no longer falls within that confiscation because gold jewelry was exempt. So there were so many ways you could get around it. Another one was collectible coins. You know, if you had collectible coins or coins that were rare, then it didn't fall under the bullion either. And it's the same today. Like if you're going through an airport and you take more than £10,000 worth of gold in your suitcase, they'll pull you up and they'll confiscate it. They'll say you can't do that. You're smuggling money out of the country. However, if you go with $1 million worth or £1 million worth of gold jewelry, they can't do a thing because it doesn't fall within the aviation laws. So the laws are very specific. And this is why I do a lot of research on laws, because what you find out is things are not what they seem. And, you know, I think in the future, you're really going to have to understand your laws. What do you think about that?
Oh, certainly. It reminds me of a story as well, how certain professions suddenly got very rich. And believe it or not, it's not only the diplomats that could, you know, go abroad and bring some stuff, smuggle it in to Poland and sell it on the black market, but it was also sportsmen. So the right to leave the country and then go to Western countries, and that gave them that leverage that they could bring things that were unavailable in the country, smuggle it in and use that little privilege they had to become more wealthy. So certainly, if you know your rights and your law, you can leverage to your own advantage.
For sure. I mean, and all of this in America really goes back to the Federal Reserve, right? In 1913, the Federal Reserve Act came in. And from that point on, people had to pay income tax. So the IRS was formed. And also, that was when the people had to really start to be milked for the national debt. They became the cash cows. They became the collateral of the Federal Reserve. And if people want to know why, if you leave the US, you get chased all across the world to pay your taxes, that's why. You're collateral. I mean, you are being put up as collateral. Now, when they did the 1933 gold confiscation, that wasn't going to the government. It wasn't going to the Treasury. They were working at the behest of the Federal Reserve because they were bankrupt. They were essentially bankrupt. And the US has been bankrupt many times. But what the banksters do is they say, oh, well, we'll roll over your debt. And they do it for 80 years at a time. And they say, we'll roll it over, but you have to put more collateral. And that's how they get to take control of all of the land, all of the industry. and, you know, then the private property of the people.
And they plan it in advance, actually, because some clever people noticed that the new currency from 1950 in Poland was already printed in 1948. So they've planned it years ahead, 2 years ahead, maybe even more, considering as well that the earlier devaluation they performed in 1944. So clearly they had the plan of how to steal money from people in few stages, in few steps, if you will. And similarly, the second hyperinflation that was in Poland was in 1995. And notice again, they've used first the war and secondly a huge political transformation, which is the end of the Soviet Union and the Eastern countries becoming westernized.
Yeah, so for listeners that don't know this history, what we're talking about here is after 1945, Poland was sold out to the Soviets. So, of course, we've got this phony historical narrative that everyone in Europe went to war for Poland because Poland got invaded by the Nazis, which makes no sense when you understand that in 1945, it had already been agreed during World War II with Stalin that Poland would be given to the Soviets. So they went to war for your money, but then they sold you out at the end. Makes no sense to me. Just like it makes no sense that the Bank of England was giving gold to the Nazis to fund the war, which, again, makes no sense. But let's forget about that for a second. Let's go to the Polish experience. So you had totalitarian communism here right up until around 1989. That's when the Berlin Wall fell. And then you had a hyperinflation between 1989 and 1990. However, that actually doesn't tell the full story. And I've actually got your father's payslips here. And I've studied those payslips to see how the inflation went. And what people have to understand is that when we go to these currency resets, when we go to the monetary resets, there are always people who are front running it. They understand what's happening and they're getting themselves prepared. And they're getting themselves prepared in things that cannot be stolen and inflated away, which is real stuff. And wealth-wise, it's always gold. Now, if you look at what's happening in the world right now, what's China doing? What's Russia doing? What are the BRICS nations doing? What's Poland doing? What's Czech Republic doing? What's Hungary doing? They're all buying gold and they're buying it at record levels because they understand what's coming. But going back to Poland's experience, like you said, there was the totalitarian regime, but people must have known what was coming because the currency got switched over at the end of 1994. The people didn't know what was going on, but wealthy people did. They were ready and they were buying up assets, right, in this hyperinflating currency.
Certainly, and not only wealthy people, but also Western corporations. With the money devaluation, they were buying national assets that were now privatized for pennies.
Yeah, because they could just come in with a foreign currency, buy up a load of that inflating currency and buy up anything in the country they wanted. I mean, Poland today is probably still a damn sight better than the majority of countries. So I will say that, you know, people who own assets here, people actually own real assets, which I'd love to talk about in part two. But just to go to the hyperinflation, I've got your dad's payslips, your father's payslips here. And in 1986, he was being paid 13,000 zloty a month. 13,000 a month. A year later, 17,000 a month. A year after that, 75,000 a month. So just let's go through that again. 13,000, 17,000, 75,000. A year after that, 650,000 a month. And from month to month, it was going 650,000 one month, 750,000 another month. And by the end of the year, he was at 900,000 a month. Now you just think about how you live with that kind of inflation, where every month you're getting another 150,000 added to your salary. It sounds great, doesn't it? It sounds fantastic. But remember, listeners, what we're talking about here is a currency dying. That means that the 650,000 you have one month buys you next to nothing the next month. So you have to have a pay rise every single month just to cover your expenditure. However, with every pay rise, you actually are able to buy less. So the numbers go up, but the value goes down. Now, that was 1990. December 1993, he was being paid 2,770,000. So he'd added 2 million to his salary by that point. A year later, he was at 4,500,000. And then they reset the currency. So in mid-1994, he was being paid 4.5 million a month. And in December 1994, 430. So he went from 4.5 million a month to 430. And that would have consisted of another wealth stripping. So he's being wealth stripped every month. And then he goes to 430. But of course, when they do that, when they lop off, what was it there? They lop four figures to that one. They also devalue. So you actually would have had more money with the 4.5 million than you had with the 430, which is absolutely ludicrous. But this is how they reset currencies. And that is precisely why we're doing this episode now, because we want to talk about these histories. And in part one, we're giving you some of the interesting and novel histories. And in part two, we're going to talk more about that gold price. But how do you feel about that? You actually lived through this period. You was alive. You was seeing your parents walk around with all this cash.
Oh, yeah. I remember it, actually. They always walked with all the savings they had. And they were looking for people who were queuing or seemed to be queuing. Because you never knew. Maybe there was something new sharp and you could buy something quickly. And this lodge, you know, worthless paper into something real, because if you had something, you could just sell it in the future or barter it for something else. So people were just buying random stuff, really, whatever they could buy. But then, of course, that was a bit early, before the Soviet Union collapsed. But after we opened our borders, there was not a problem. It was not really dislodging or getting rid of your worthless paper, but also because we were just basically struggling a lot just to get by.
Well, a hyperinflation really is one of the most catastrophic ends to a financial system. They've been claiming they're terrified of deflation, but when deflation happens, the things that we want to own get cheaper. So who's deflation bad for? Well, it's bad for banksters, of course. It's bad for banksters. And in this indebted system, which is a Ponzi scheme, where you have to keep adding more and more zeros to the currency, because of course the debt's ever inflating and all of that debt is loaned into existence. So you can't ever pay off the national debt. Because if you paid everything back off, there'd still be all of the interest, and that's the Ponzi system. They have to keep inflating the currency, but then, of course, the debt increases until at some point the whole world is so saturated in debt that all of the financial system starts to break down, and that's where we're at now. That's why we're seeing massive inflation across the world. The difference today is it's not just one currency like the Polish złoty or the German Deutsche Mark or the Hungarian pengo or whatever crappy currency it is. And we've seen hyperinflations across the world many times and sometimes simultaneous ones. But what we've never seen is the entire financial system reset at the same time. Now, why do we have to reset the whole system now? Well, of course, it's because the whole system's interconnected. You've got 2 to 4 quadrillion with a capital Q in derivatives that are held between all of the largest banks in the world. I'm talking the commercial banks. So all it takes is for one bank to go down and the rest of the system comes down. And of course, the banks will go down because they're already going down. We're having banking crises left, right and center. So the only way they can do this now is just to keep inflating the currency. That's why gold's responding. And that's why this episode's so critical, to understand what is happening, how it's happening, and to hear from somebody who's actually lived through that period. And you talked a lot about queuing there, which is, you know, it's kind of a silly thing. People think, oh, queuing. But what that actually represents is people were spending an extraordinary amount of time just queuing for the necessities of life, just necessity goods, because there were shortages everywhere. Sometimes they'd have to take turns queuing because the queues were that long because there were so many shortages. And I've got a quote here from a Warsaw newspaper talking about the queuing. And it said this: sugar queues have become so commonplace in recent weeks that today there is no store in Warsaw before which large crowds of women would not gather since the small hours. So what it's saying there is there's no store in the city, the capital city, where women are not queuing in the early hours of the morning, waiting till the next day to get their bread or milk or whatever the hell it is. Does that sound legitimate? Do you remember times like this?
Oh, I do, Michael. And not only that, you had to be lucky to be able to buy something. You also needed a little token. So you had to pay for your stuff. But to have the privilege to actually pay for something, you needed to have some sort of food stamp that was given only in a limited quantity per person on a monthly basis. So you couldn't buy more, even if you could afford to pay and buy more stuff, because everything was rationed, unless you were the lucky one to have dollars, and then you could use a broad range of shops which had everything you ever wanted, as long as you could pay in dollars.
Just a quick announcement, everyone. We are now going into unprecedented times when it comes to the financial system. We have had pension portfolios collapsing in value. We also have bank deposits that are set up to be bailed in. Similarly, we have a debt bubble that looks set to burst, and the potential for the greatest stock market collapse in human history. Moving forwards, protecting our wealth and securing our financial futures has never been more challenging. However, this is what I specialize in, and this is why I'm delivering group coaching for investors. We have our next group being lined up as we speak. Coaching takes place over 12 weeks and it will teach you how to ensure that your pensions, your investment accounts, and your physical assets are protected going into the financial reset. Also, we discuss the opportunities that will be there. This will be the greatest wealth transfer in human history, and yet so few people see what's coming, including traditional financial advisors, that it's never been more important for us to be at the helm of our own finances, and that is what coaching is all about. Group coaching takes place with me each week live on Zoom for 12 weeks, and after each and every session, we do a Q&A to ensure that all of your questions are answered. As well as the one-to-one coaching sessions, you will also be able to access my private members community and the Investors Club, which is where other people who have graduated from my coaching meet to discuss opportunities and risks. Spaces are now limited, but if you would like to join us, there is still time. For more information or to book onto group coaching, please email me at parallelsystems@protonmail.com. That's parallelsystems@protonmail.com. Thank you so much for listening to this announcement, and I hope to see some of you there in our next group coaching for investors. Well, these were special stores where you could only pay in dollars. And if you went to that special store, you had to be somebody who was, yeah, a politician or somebody part of the elite. And that's exactly like today. That's exactly the same thing that's happening. If you go back to during 2020 and 2021, when everyone else was being told, you have to stay at home, you cannot do this. They were flying around in private jets. They were eating out at restaurants. They were fine. You know, this is the two-tier society that they create. But I've got another quote here, and it's talking about the energy cost, because people don't realize the time and energy cost of transactions goes up monumentally. Because, of course, now everything takes 10, 50 times. Well, I would say hundreds and hundreds of times the amount of time. Today, you just go into a shop and get what you want. It's similar to jarring. The last few years, remember when you was going to the supermarket and you was going around in a single file and you had to queue outside because you only had so many in? That was setting people up for exactly what we're talking about. And you only know that if you can draw the parallels. You know, if you can see what history looked like, you say, oh, wow, actually, they are conditioning people already for that future. That's what I think is happening here. So I've got a quote here. The additional time and energy put into trade transactions is sometimes called the shoe leather cost. Inflation also gave rise to calculation problems. S. Karpinski wrote in November, "The constant calculations and additions of the cost of living allowance makes our work at the office extremely difficult. Companies and institutions are struggling to calculate allowances and recalculate capital." And it goes on to say that each person, regardless of his education, and remember, Poland's a rural country, so you've got lots of farmers, each day they were having to deal in numbers in the millions. So all transactions had to be calculated in the millions. Can you imagine when the numbers are going up daily? You've got farmers there and they're like, well, it's 10 million, 50 million. And they're trying to do these complex sums in the head just to do simple transactions. This is what we mean about the time and energy cost of transactions. So society becomes extremely inefficient. And of course, that can precede another breakdown in society. You have great depressions because of it. And these are things that people don't really talk about. But I think they're all on the horizon. So what do you think about that one? You've lived it. You've been there. You've stood in those queues.
Well, I remember like yesterday, I always got one note from my mom to buy a sweet. So I went to shop. I bought the sweet. A week later or 2 weeks later, I got another note. I went to shop, tried to buy a sweet, and she said, no. Couldn't buy it anymore for that note. So I was so disappointed. My mom didn't give me a second one because they were poor. But definitely nothing works as it should. And the government's always excellent in stealing your money additionally. Because don't forget, things were Russian. So for example, another thing that was Russian was housing. If you wanted to buy a house, you had to list yourself into a book and you had to wait your turn. But while you were waiting, and we are not talking months, we are talking years, you had to monthly pay a minimum amount into that bank account that you were saving as a deposit towards your future flat, and you couldn't withdraw those money. They were forcing you into saving only to have a hope of one day having a car or a flat. So then they were devaluing those money. So I remember my mom told me that for many years they've been trying to live, they were living in my grandparents' flat. There was my grandpa, granddad, my parents, so you've got four, me fifth, my cousin. six, and my auntie as well, seven people.
Yeah, and one of my favourite stories from your father, because I've asked him lots of questions about the hyperinflation, but one of my favourite stories from your father is he once queued for 2 weeks. The actual story is he was doing what we said earlier, which is walking around the city with his entire life savings in his back pocket, which is what everyone did, because you couldn't keep that money. This is how hyperinflations work. Once people lose confidence in the paper money that's backed by nothing, they will take that out and they'll rush to buy anything and everything that is real. Anything to get them out of the currency. And it doesn't even matter if they want it, doesn't matter if they need it, doesn't matter if they like it. Anything is better than the currency. And of course, you have massive shortages of goods anyways during those times. So anything becomes valuable because people will just go back to trade and barter if they can't trust the money and if they can't do the sums as well. So you'll buy anything to get out of the paper, knowing that at least I can trade and barter with this for something else. So he was walking around with his life savings and he saw a queue. So naturally, in those times when it's like that, if you see a queue, you get in it. You don't care what's at the end of it. It's like, I'm getting in the queue because other people are there. And that's what he did. So he heard a rumor that there was potentially going to be a washing machine for sale in this store, but it wasn't there yet. Maybe there was going to be a delivery in a month or 2 months or 1 month or 3 weeks. He had no idea, but he got in the queue and he queued for 2 weeks with his cousin. So they did shifts. One did 12 hours and then the other one came and did 12 hours. And in between the shifts, the other one would go work and sleep. And he queued for 2 weeks to get to the front of that queue. And he did buy that washing machine. He got the washing machine. So he queued for 2 weeks just to get a washing machine. That's how desperate people were to get out of the currency. And here's the worst part of that story, is when he got to the front of the queue, he got told that there was potentially going to be another washing machine coming in a few weeks. So he went all the way to the back of the queue and waited again. And I don't know what he got the second time. I can't remember if it was a washing machine or something else, but he queued for another 2 weeks. So that was a month of his life queuing. And when he wasn't queuing, he was working to get the hyperinflating currency to queue some more. And it's a joke, right? We sit here and laugh, but actually that is a complete tragedy. But there's many other stories that I've heard from him, which maybe we'll touch on in part two. But before we end this one, I just wanted to say, you know, the Roman Empire fell victim to hyperinflation. You know, it's happened so many times throughout history. They debased the currency. The Germans in the 1920s, were an industrial powerhouse. Their currency hyperinflated. You know, all currencies that are made out of paper, all fiat currencies go to zero. And what we're seeing take place right now in gold is the warning sign. It's telling us what people like myself have been saying for a long time. It's telling all of us that we're getting close to it. And we can see that because the world's getting more and more off kilter, more and more off axis. And they're trying their best to keep people in the system. And that's why we've got cryptos. That's why we've got more and more excitement in the stock market. But ultimately, this one's not going to go on for much longer. And I think we really have to pay attention to stories like this. And when you see your bank account and your bank balances, they're buying you less and less and less. And you see what's happening globally with countries like China, buying record amounts of gold, mining more gold than any other country on planet Earth. And you've got Russia as well doing the same. And you can see the setup for the currency reset for gold to go back into the system. You really, really have to pay attention because this could happen as quick as tomorrow. You could wake up and you are one of those people where they've just lopped off numbers off the currency. But I think this time it's going to be probably quite different because they're going for a currency reset that's going to then take us to digital currencies. Therefore, everything that's in the old system that's a financialized asset will probably be lost in that changeover. So we're talking pensions, stock portfolios, and of course, all of the currencies. So this is going to be way worse. It's going to be like a combination of all of the worst financial disasters in history. And I think the reason they have to do it that way is to trap you in the new system. So you've got no choice. But with gold, you will have a choice. So in part two, we're going to discuss what a currency reset could look like. We're going to be more speculative on talking about the future. We're going to discuss the French hyperinflation and take the lessons from that. We're going to talk more about confiscations. So lots to talk about in part two. Thank you so much for your time on this one. Moni, do you have any final words before we go to part two?
I'm looking forward to part two.
Yeah, me too. I think we've got a lot to talk about. So with that, listeners, thank you so much for listening. Members, please head over to parallelmic.com to listen to the rest of the episode. If you're not a member yet, please consider joining us and I will see each and every one of you in the next one.
What you are basic. Deep, deep down, far, far in. is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence.
Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.